I Am Balance brings together psychiatry colleagues whose diverse cultural and professional backgrounds span the United States and the Caribbean. This collaborative effort seeks to provide a safe space where issues, information, and perspectives related to child and adolescent mental health can be shared with families and their communities. We're happy to have you join the conversation with Dr. Richards and Dr. German as we reach across the borders to delve into the wonderful world of child and adolescent psychiatry.
Hello, and welcome back to I Am Balance Schools in Series, second episode, where we'll continue to talk about what's been happening with kids, teenagers, parents with back to school. I'm Dr. Richards.
And I'm Dr. German.
And today, Dr. German, you know, I'm excited about this. It's our pleasure to welcome back colleague and friend to the show, licensed school psychologist, Dr. Lene Rivers. Hello, Dr. Rivers. Welcome back.
Hello, hello. Good to be back.
Nice to have you back.
Yes, nice to have you back. So, Dr. Rivers, we've been doing this series on back to school. And now that we're in October, for a lot of the children, the teens, and the parents that I'm working with, everybody's been trying to get back into this groove. Mm-hmm. And I noticed some trends just in terms of child and adolescent psychiatry practice for me, that I'm noticing some things already kind of changing with the landscape, with children, adolescents, and parents getting back into the groove of things. For one, and I don't know when Dr. German gives his feedback on this, I noticed from the inpatient child and adolescent psychiatry perspective, we're starting to see an uptick in admissions, right? And I'm also seeing in both inpatient and outpatient a greater sense of urgency with stuff like anxiety disorders, mood disorders, and then our topic from our first season, why can't I pay attention? Those are the things that have been being flagged as well. Dr. J, what are you seeing?
Yes, so piggybacking on exactly what you've described on the inpatient and the outpatient side, there's been increased frequency now of admissions, or on the outpatient side, referrals.
Yes.
For these kids and adolescents. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of it being related to readjusting now to the routine that we described in our last episode. And then also, if school in the past has been a trigger for a lot of those kids, then now being plopped back into that setting, it's kind of resurfacing a lot of the things you've already pointed out. So a lot of anxiety, a lot of social difficulties, a lot of issues if there's academic challenges that have never been appropriately evaluated. And and then now there's the expectation that you're building on what you were supposed to have learned or what you may have forgotten. So yes, there has been an uptick in both of those different settings that I've seen now that we're 2 months into the academic year.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing when you know that even when those things are coming to your doorstep, you have access to great psychologists, right?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Like Dr. Rivers, right? Yeah. So Dr. Rivers, what has been landing on your doorstep and what is usually your approach to what's been coming at you?
So, good question. And this is now the time of year where referrals start to increase.
Yeah.
Especially from the school setting. And it usually starts out with academic. Mm-hmm. And a lot of academic difficulties can then lead to behavioral difficulties. Even when, like, we have discussions and kids are inpatient or outpatient, I'm always curious, well, how did they do in school? Like, how are they doing in school before these actual inpatient referrals became sparked? But typically the referrals would come in academically. They're having difficulty, if it's younger children, difficulty with reading, which then may lead to behavioral difficulties. And so a lot of times my first question is always, okay, well, what has been done? Has the child ever received any one-on-one support academically? And usually the school can say, yes, we've tried you know, some reading intervention, and then the referral comes to me. Even behaviorally, younger kids, not sitting still, easily frustrated, tantrums that should be, the child should be beyond that point age-wise. And so they're standing out, right? And then you do have kids who are quiet, who don't draw attention to themselves with the teachers and kind of fly under the radar, but they're just as important as well to keep an eye on, because maybe they're anxious, or maybe they're withdrawn, or maybe they have social skill deficits. But the referrals, sometimes it's difficult for the teacher to really pinpoint it. So what we typically do with the psychoeducational evaluation is do a full evaluation, starting with cognitive development. How well can the child, and the cognitive development is really giving us an idea of where we would expect a child to perform in the academic setting, right? Yeah. So we want to look at their cognitive development, and that's also referred to as an IQ. So we look at their cognitive development. We look at their language, their ability to express themselves, to understand information. We also look at their memory. How well can they sit in a classroom and remember what the teacher is saying, or be able to take notes? And then we look specifically at academics. Are their academics meeting the standards of their same age peers? And are, what are their strengths and weaknesses? And typically you're going to find a child that does have some strengths somewhere in that psychoeducational evaluation. And that's important to know, because that's what you want to build off of. So really you want to get a full picture of the child, from the cognitive to the language development, to the academic development, reading, math, spelling, writing, and then behaviorally. And you want that input from the teacher, from the parent, and if they're old enough, to have the student themselves give feedback on how they're feeling.
And I think that's those are two like really important aspects of kind of what comes at you and trying to understand what might be the underlying challenge or precipitant to a child that may not, you know, might be having some struggles in the school setting. A question I have for you, and then I'll let Dr. J jump in, because I know that he had some questions as well. A question I ask, because a lot of times these kiddos come into the office, it's the beginning of the year, parents are feeling urgent and anxious, teachers are feeling urgent and anxious. And I have firsthand knowledge of what your schedule can look like in terms of getting a psychoeducational evaluation scheduled and done, which can kind of take a minute. What would be some interim interventions that you think might be useful for, let's say, a kiddo like the one that you described might have an academic challenge that might be spiraling into some behavioral issues?
And for me, the most important information is history and data. Coming to me and saying that they're struggling with reading, my question is, or math, or they're not able to stay focused or pay attention. And my question is always, well, what have you done? So with the first hiccup or difficulty, that shouldn't always trigger an evaluation, but should start data collection from the teacher. Okay, we've tried. A lot of schools have learning support staff, or a lot of teachers do go the extra mile and they're like, well, I've tried working with them one-on-one. Yeah. We've done some reading intervention, some phonological development. We've put together some behavioral modifications. If it's behavior, what have you tried? Have you tried some positive reinforcement? So the as much data as you can have to send with the child, the better the evaluation will be. And then you can see sometimes maybe they don't need an evaluation. Maybe it was just something they missed, or it was just something in their environment. So it was situational. So not every hiccup needs a referral. Yeah. Definitely try to collect data and see if they respond to the interventions that you're putting in place.
Dr. J, I know you and I have talked about how the referral process and kind of getting kiddos in for psychological assessments. What are your thoughts? I know Dr. Rivers gave us a lot of really great information.
Yep. So all of that is super helpful for the psychologist to be able to at least have an area where to focus, at least at the beginning. Now, in speaking then with the parent, or speaking, or, you know, getting more information from the school, it at least will allow the psychologist to kind of have a starting point. And then now if the question actually changes from that point forward because of other things that the psychologist now generates from your question, at least it gives the assessment a good starting point rather than to have it be so broad and time consuming to try to figure out what may need to be done. So, which can, you know, be very helpful because as Dr. Rivers was already saying, sometimes it may be a narrow focus of what may need to be done rather than to do something broad just to get at that same narrow point as well. So Dr. Rivers, what more do you think you might be able to add in that area?
That is such a great point that you made. I can't tell you how many times parents have called wanting an evaluation and not really knowing what they want it for, other than maybe the school said the child is acting up, but there's no specifics. It's, well, what type of behavior are they seeing? What have they tried? Is this the first time you've heard about it? Or they may say behavior and it has nothing to do with their behavior. It has more so to do with the academics. And a lot of that shows up, especially with kids who may potentially be referred for like autism. Sometimes the schools have a difficult time identifying that or wrapping their head around that, how to tell the parents. And so they'll just say behavior, but it's very helpful to get a referral question. And a lot of times really good referrals also come from the pediatrician as well. That can be helpful. So either coming from the school, the psychiatrist, or pediatrician really helps drive. And then it helps the parent really understand on a broader basis what the child's strengths and weaknesses are and to really provide an accurate diagnosis.
And I agree. I think that's crucial for us to understand because I think so many things that we deal with, whether it be psychiatric, psychological, they usually present with behavior. So you may have, Dr. Rivers, as you're talking about, that kiddo that may be on that autism spectrum disorder. You may have that kiddo with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder that may be talking too much in class, can't sit still. But then you may also have your depressed kiddo or your anxious kiddo that may present as they struggle when those emotions begin to become overwhelming and it's hard for them to stay in class. So they might be seeking out a teacher or seeking out a nurse very often. And they're basically presenting as behavior, but the underlying challenges can be so varied. I oftentimes, like I said, have parents and families that come in or teachers that bring these kiddos in, and we've talked already how important it is to really try to narrow down that referral question. But a lot of times, what also comes in is, number one, is this kiddo safe to be in the classroom, right? And what can we do now? Like, I want something now that can help us help this kiddo be able to do as well as they possibly can in the academic setting. Dr. Rivers, I know you and I have shared some cases like that. What is usually your approach to that?
So again, information is key. And a lot of times when the behavior triggers something alarming in the schools just react instead of, again, asking some really important questions. Is this the first time we've seen the behavior? Where did it stem from? And just having simple conversations, right? So just having a plan in place to be less reactive and a little more proactive is also very helpful when you're thinking about referring a kid. Because like we said, not all kids need to be referred, even if it's for behavior that may be initially alarming to the school, right? And the question always goes back to, what have you done? What are you saying? What's the history? And you can always reach out and get assistance and ask psychologists or psychiatrists for their input. But there are a lot of different avenues that schools can take.
Yeah. And in our last episode, Dr. Jay and I talked a bit about the fact that there's a huge changing landscape, you know, just in terms of academics and the academic environment. And we spoke a little bit about the tragedy that happened recently, you know, with the school shooting and understanding the, you know, we called it in our last episode, we said those extraordinary things that can happen, you know, in the academic setting, and what students and teachers and parents can do to insulate their children and adolescents as best as they possibly can. Dr. J, you want to say a few words about that?
Yeah, I guess also being that I know that you have that connection with the school system, Dr. Rivers, is there something that we may have, not only some parents listening, but some of those parents may be teachers, or they may also just still have the question as well. What is something that you think can be done? Because obviously, oftentimes, we're getting involved, whether they're coming through our doors as psychiatrists, because it's gotten to a severe point, or coming through your door as well, right? It's that it's gotten to a sub-crisis or crisis. What do you think could be done by schools to kind of incorporate processes to more so kind of like flush out some of these scenarios before they become an issue?
Right.
So, you know, to be more proactive, because as we were saying in our last episode, a lot of these situations are sometimes kids that unfortunately have been, because they're not having externalized behavior, they're right there, but they're under the radar.
Right.
Yet, you know, going through each grade until now something happens, because now that point, that threshold is crossed. But, you know, this is probably a child that could have been assisted maybe 3 or 4 grades earlier. So right. What are your thoughts about what maybe schools or parents can inquire if it's being done on a mass level, just to kind of be able to kind of screen for some of these individuals that may be having some trouble with reading or something, like to get that assessment for dyslexia or to get that screening for a social anxiety issue or anything like that?
Good question. And there's some schools out there that are doing a really good job with that. And it's doing more of a broad-based, school-wide, social-emotional type of assessment where you can use specific protocols or assessments from as young as kindergarten through high school, just to get a feel for how kids are feeling, what are their thoughts, what do they think about their peers. Some schools have breaks during the day or during the week where they call it's community time, and they openly talk about emotions and to integrate that into the day-to-day learning, talk about worries versus what are extreme worries versus everyday worries, sadness, feelings in general. Academically, a lot of schools, academically, they seem to do well because that's what we're going to school for, right?
Yeah.
So you have a lot of standardized tests, you have data and that type of thing. So they know that. Sometimes it does get lost and there's a little gray area when you start to throw behavior in it, because not all behavior is negative. So you want to look at what kids do really well, what kids out there have a lot of really good adaptive skills, leadership skills, social skills, and then what kids don't. And then it can help direct what you do as a school. Do you do a leadership program? Do you start to integrate a little more social skills? Do you start using a buddy system for kids who are socially awkward, that type of thing? But you can do the same type of assessment that you do academically on a broad level with the social emotional aspect too. And there are a lot of scales out there that schools can tag into and use in their community.
Yeah. And Dr. Rivers, you used a word that for me is very exciting, which is that whole concept of social emotional learning in schools. And what I'm hearing both yourself and Dr. J say in different ways is that especially for our schools, you don't necessarily have to be a mental health expert, right? Or
exactly.
I think the biggest thing you do in that environment as teacher or as academic personnel is exactly what you're saying, which is getting to know your student population, getting them comfortable in an environment where they feel heard, where they feel seen. And that way, if things kind of start to feel off, you would be able to kind of see that quicker than teachers and academic personnel that are not as involved or as connected with the students. And I think that's kind of like the basic learning point. You know, Dr. Rivers, I know you and I have done several threat assessments together in situations where things have maybe crescendoed to a situation where there may be some concerns with risk to self or risk to others. And in those assessments, it becomes so much more effective when you're working with schools that kind of know students and parents that are excellent advocates, and you're able to kind of get the information that you need to help you not just make an assessment, but come up with a plan moving forward that can actually help this child, this teenager, do better on the way to kind of doing the best that they possibly can. And like Dr. J hinted at, a lot of times there's this tendency to kind of be reactive, you know, and when even when we look at the tragedy that happened in Georgia, very tragic, very sad, even with that adolescent that was involved, in retrospect, they were able to say, like with most incidents like this, is that there were many flags that may have been missed or not acted upon effectively. So getting in that mode of being more proactive as opposed to reactive, and schools doing whatever trainings that they need to do in crisis prevention so that they feel empowered and equipped to manage. And then, of course, in my head, never underestimating the role of the parent. And I always encourage my parents, you know, you're your expert on your child. So being mindful of anything that's changing in terms of the child's functioning, whether it be academic, social, and using that as your guide. Dr. J, thoughts? I know we're getting ready to wrap up. Thoughts?
Yeah. And one of the key things that comes to mind while we were speaking was, because being a former educator in my other life, is, you know, recalling that although I was at the high school level, it's so, you know, the one of the things, I believe they still do it, but I remember it when, at least back in those days, that, yeah, in your primary school years, part of the report card wasn't just about how well you were making progress in math and science. You know, it was also about your behavior. You know, there were different areas of indicators of different things that were being graded as part of your behavior, you know, and your social progress. You know, and obviously once kids get to junior high, that's not there anymore, because now it's just about the grades. And I've always felt that to some extent there is a disservice in that aspect of that throughout the years, and should be not just a brief comment, but actually for teachers, if I think it would be something that a lot of junior high school kids and even high school kids would be at least more attentive to if they realize that those things were being looked at. It's not to be overly critical to make someone self-conscious about stuff, but still to kind of allow, you know, that to also be looked at in the sense of it's making that teacher, because sometimes, especially depending on how big the class size is, for a teacher that might have 30 kids and that's just one class of maybe, you know, having six different periods, that can be a lot. But if that teacher now is having to a small degree to kind of like maybe check off four little areas of evaluating social progress, it might allow that person to kind of pick up on some of the things that can so easily fall behind, below the radar, you know. So that was just kind of like one of my thoughts. And then just the other thing is just the notion here of social, just how important it also is for parents. That for parents, one of the key things that I know everybody is busy, but if parents are able at some point to kind of pick back up that notion of certain days of the week, sitting down with your adolescent and or any of your kids and having a meal together where, again, the focus is the meal and not allowing electronics or anything like that to interrupt, because then it allows, again, that parent to also have better attunement with what is going on with their child. Because we can, you know, you've pointed it out, Dr. Richards, in the past about, yeah, everybody can be, you know, we're talking about this notion of being busy because of these schedules we have.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, we're kind of looking like we're just talking past each other. So that was just another thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's how I feel about it, you know, because I think that in today's world, being overscheduled is celebrated. And I agree. I think it's really important to find those moments where you're able to connect with your children, your teenagers, and the people around you, because especially for our children and teenagers, those little moments are where we find priceless nuggets of information, either with the way that they're functioning academically or socially. And as you rightly said, allow us to be fully attuned to what's really happening. This has been a fantastic, fantastic discussion. I want to bounce the conversation to Dr. Rivers as we end to see what her final thoughts are.
I think it's been a wonderful discussion. So many things to think about, but I definitely think we cannot dismiss the importance of social and emotional understanding.
Yeah.
Yes, kids are, well, understanding that kids have strengths and weaknesses academically and behaviorally, socially and emotionally. And a lot of times there's a place for psychological evaluations, psychoeducational evaluations, but with that goes along with the importance of the parent, the teacher, and the child themselves being connected socially and emotionally and being proactive. So a lot of things to think about, and there are a lot of tools out there that we can all use as well.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Dr. Rivers, thank you so, so very much for joining us today. Like I said, friend to the show, colleague, wonderful, one of the school psychologists out there really trying to make a difference for children and adolescents. And I know that you will be back to join us again sometime in the near future. But
Absolutely.
Until, yes, until then, I'm Dr. Richards.
Dr. German.
Thank you so much, guys. See you again next time.
Take care.